So what can you do? What can you do realistically, you know, that takes into account what you are about? Well, here is what you can do. Ignore the activists, ignore the revolutionaries. We have to face bullets, we have to face military trials. It doesn't matter really what you do. It doesn't matter if Facebook is going to reveal my information or not. I have to assume that I'm being constantly watched, that everything about me is public. It doesn't matter. But what matters is ordinary users who use your products to practice their agency. When you decide that they cannot decide to choose a pseudonym, then you are negating them the right to negotiate their identity. The right to negotiate your identity is, it's not in the Charter of Human Rights, but it's actually essential to most rights. Negotiated identity is very important. I get to choose whether to reveal who I am and how to reveal who I am and decide who I am on my own terms and on my own basis.
Palestine on my mind. In the beginning, it was on me to pass on the news. Most of my ward mates are not allowed visits, and none of us are allowed newspapers. So my weekly visit had become the primary source of information. News of the Zionists' protracted electoral impasse and the deal of the century kept rolling in. I remember trying to analyze and share the news quickly, broadcasting it by shouting through the hatch in my cell door. That was probably when my ward mates first got to know me. In any case, Palestine was always on my mind. Then came the pandemic. Cutting off visits and the news along with them, I protested with a hunger strike that lasted 37 days. I told my cellmate about the time I visited the Empty Stomachs Solidarity sit-in tent in Gaza. I've been on hunger strike 4 times since then. And each time I remember the Palestinian captives' strike. Palestine's always on my mind. Despite the defeats, I'm still grateful to the revolution for all it gave me. For one, I was able to visit Palestine twice. I never say I visited Gaza, not only because Palestine is indivisible, but because anyone who visits Gaza cannot but realize that they're in the metropole of Palestine, its beating heart. There, you swap the Palestine of dreams, metaphor, and poetry for the Palestine of flesh and blood and tears and sweat. To isolate me from my ward mates, or perhaps to contain me 1 week into my strike, I was moved to another ward where newspapers were allowed. After 6 months of being denied the printed word, I held a state newspaper in my hand. The first thing I see is a photo of a Palestinian child wearing a cabbage leaf on her face in place of a surgical mask. I scan for news of the pandemic and try to imagine how the world has changed, try to imagine how my son Khaled is coping with the closures, the social distancing, the masks and swabs. I always take pride in the fact that the first stamp on his passport, and the last on mine before my imprisonment, is from the Rafah border crossing. Khaled was born at the height of the revolution and visited Palestine before he was even 1 year old. On that first visit, I spoke of my family's attempts to live a normal life, under exceptional circumstances, with no end in sight. I thought that was the Palestinian experience. So I ended my speech with the words, "I am Palestinian." Words that seem so naive now that the whole world is living in exceptional circumstances with no end in sight. So did we all become Palestinians? Of course not. Only the children of Gaza are photographed wearing cabbage leaves instead of masks. I'm not Palestinian and have done nothing worth mentioning for the cause. But when visits started up again and Khaled came in wearing a mask specially designed for the sensitivities related to his autism, it did look to me like that cabbage mask. I'm not a Palestinian, but I'm an Arab, and Palestine's always on my mind. After my hunger strike ended, I was returned to my original cell. My ward mates gave me a big welcome. It was Eid al-Fitr, and we passed the night talking and singing. Then they asked me to sing. I'm not a very good singer, but I contributed for the first time with something other than news and analysis and sang, "I call out to you. Palestine's on my mind." After Eid, I was banned from writing to my family. More accurately, I failed to stay within the fuzzy, ever-shifting red lines that govern what subjects are permissible for correspondence. My last letter had not made it through because I wrote of my concern for my sister Mona's health in the pandemic, wondering if her immune system might have been affected by all the tear gas she inhaled during the early days of the revolution. I don't know if the offense was the reference to the revolution, even in a negative context, or if it was the tear gas that annoyed them. I do know that the quantity of tear gas fired at revolutionaries in Egypt is comparable only to that used against Palestinians in Jerusalem and the West Bank, and that its long-term effects haven't been studied properly. Palestine's always on my mind. My mother started a sit-in in front of the prison gates, closed, they said, because of COVID, and it ended in her and my two sisters being assaulted and Senat being arrested for the third time. My prison mates are embarrassed to tell me the bad news, so I hear it late. I try to comfort them and myself by describing Senet's stubborn, defiant personality. I tell them she was named after Senet Mahidli, the bride of the South. Through the hatch in the cell door, I tell the story of an argument we had when I refused to drop everything I was doing and wouldn't let her skip school exams to go to Gaza together after the resistance demolished the separation wall along the border. I guess, back then, I thought the siege wouldn't last. By 2012, our roles were reversed. At the first opportunity, I put the revolution aside and traveled to Palestine. Senet, who'd had a friend die in her arms in the clashes after the storming of the Zionist embassy, couldn't understand how anyone could take a break from the revolution. But at the end of that year, with the onset of bombing on Gaza again, Senet left immediately. She entered without a passport or official stamps and went off the radar entirely until the war was over. Since I'd been talking through the hatch about Senet, I got a message brimming with affection from my neighbor, Anas, who is as dear to me as are all his siblings. He was born the same year as Senet, so I find it hard to accept he's not a boy anymore, but a man almost in his 30s. That night, I dreamed of Esmet, his martyred sister, instead of Senet, my captive sister. And woke up to sing, "On My Mind, There's a Song," for Palestine is always on my mind. While telling my family's history, I discover that a new neighbor, the mysterious Sam Saif, who had hijacked a plane to demand the female prisoner's release, had met my father in southern Lebanon when they had both joined the resistance. What twists of fate! Two Egyptian Saifs, both communists, meeting in the camps in Lebanon. One returned to Egypt, went to prison, and came out a lawyer and defender of the weak. The other stayed with the resistance and the PLO until the PLO moved to Ramallah and the resistance moved to Gaza, leaving him alone with no battlefield, camp, or rifle. He returned to Egypt, a stranger in a strange land, lost until a revolution restored him to life. When the revolution was in retreat, he tried to resist with 70s Fideiyin tactics. So they branded him a lunatic and threw him in solitary in Toro's Scorpion 2 prison. I'm blown away by the twists in Destiny's road, but not surprised that they intersect on Palestine's threshold. For we are Arabs, and Palestine's always on my mind. For Palestine's always on our mind. Visits resume, but have been reduced to 20 minutes. Once a month, again because of the pandemic. I'm back in touch with the news. The deal of the century is moving ahead full steam. The UAE isn't content with normalizing with Israel, but is pressuring Sudan to follow suit, exploiting their fragile political and economic situation. The Arabs are not rising up. After a year in prison, I meet Rami Shath in the courthouse lockup. He's in prison for his activism with the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. We spend the whole day talking through the wire mesh, dividing our cages, exchanging news. I tell him I'm worried that the Palestinian cause will be finished off. With a very Palestinian wave of the hand, he gives me the good news that the number of Palestinians in historic Palestine has exceeded the number of Israeli Jews for the first time, and that despite Arab weakness, the BDS campaign is raising a new generation of solidarity activists around the world. He tells me that reconciliation between the Palestinian factions is imminent, and I talk about how the changing demographics in the U.S. might erode the usual identification with Zionism. But I imagine it will be a decade before this comes to fruition. Rami is optimistic. But me, I remember our betrayed spring, the siege on the embassy, the open crossing. I remember our chant, the people want to end the siege, and yours, the people want to end the division. I wonder if the people taking part in the great march of return and launching incendiary kites have heard these chants. In photos, they look very young and seem completely disconnected from the moment when we thought that the road to Jerusalem ran through Cairo. Anyhow, whether I count on optimism of the intellect or optimism of the will, Palestine's always on my mind. We start a cultural program. When it's my turn, I shout out lessons on contemporary history and politics, beginning with the history of the rights movement in Egypt. I explain the movement's solidarity with the Palestinian cause. In contrast to the global human rights movement, which was embroiled in Cold War debates, the local movement was always militant. I remember my father's criticism of the feeble positions on Palestinian rights taken by institutions like Human Rights Watch. Then I hear about their latest report on Palestine, which explicitly condemns Israel of the crime of apartheid, even in the 48 territories. Maybe Rami was right, and change is imminent. The point being, Palestine's always on my mind. Ramadan returns. It's been a year since my hunger strike. The pandemic continues and won't be ended by vaccinations. We expand the cultural program for Ramadan to include battles from Islamic history. But on the 10th, plans change, and I'm tasked with narrating the October War. My prison mates are expecting a narrative different from the one they learned in school and saw on television. I have a dilemma. How do I explain to prisoners of the current military rule the complex history of the Egyptian military? How do I relate the confusion of the last days of the war without minimizing the victories of the first days? How do I wade into the labyrinth of Camp David, this tunnel that we've never got out of? I begin by clarifying that this army never shed Palestinian blood, but a voice inside me nags that it did shed Egyptian blood. Try as I might, I'm unable to present a coherent historical narrative that combines the suffering of the Islamist movement, the ambitions of Arab nationalism, and the achievements of the secular elite. Division, once entrenched, is difficult to overcome, no matter how good the intentions. News comes of the impending announcement of Palestinian reconciliation, and I allow myself some cautious optimism. It's easy to reach a consensus on Palestine, and it's always on my mind. My compatriot and administrator of the cultural program suddenly initiates a new ritual, a midday anthem, and for some reason he settles on My Homeland. Every day he sings it to us. Why this song? I ask him. No response. It's just Palestine on my mind. What kind of national anthem is this, so full of questions and sorrow? Too beautiful to be an official national anthem, an anthem to the dream rather than the glories of leaders in ancient history. In the last 10 days of Ramadan, news arrives of Sheikh Jarrah in Al-Aqsa. Something is happening. Something will happen. Then we hear that the Murabitun at Al-Aqsa are asking for help from Gaza. Despite our isolation, we quickly understand that something is different this time. Every night, prayers go up for our people in Palestine. My wardmates are occupied by news of the missile capabilities of the resistance. I try to point out the importance of the movement inside 48, in the West Bank, Jerusalem, and on the borders. I pace back and forth in my cell, repeating, as if possessed, the whole national territory, over and over to myself. No, sorry, that's not it. The battle is still long. I mean the whole national movement. I mean all of the national components. I mean the full mobilization of every strand of the people. The full mobilization of every strand of the people. The full mobilization of every strand of the people. But why not the whole national territory? Every piece of the nation's soil, its dust. Are we not made of this dust, and to it we return? And here it is now. The whole national territory rising up, supported by Gaza, who recycles the dust of her ruins and builds anew. Anyone who has been to Gaza learns that Palestine is the people before it's the land or the shrines, that Palestine lives in its metropole, not just in the songs and poems.
We are calling for the immediate release of Alaa Abdel Fattah. Join us on freealaa.net to find out how you can help.